Punk's not dead, and neither is New Wave. Join Buzz and Ben on Static Rage, the Punk and New Wave Album Review Podcast.
Hello again. You didn't think we were coming back, did you? But here we are because it is October, and if both of us are able to and drawing breath, we will be here to talk about punk albums at least in the month of October and probably in March, because that's when we're most consistent at doing it. And welcome back to Static Rage. I am Ben, with me as always, Buzz. How are things out in the world tonight, Buzz?
I am once again coming back to inform you that we are here. We're still very much alive. And unfortunately, life happens, which is why we don't record as much as we usually do, but we will always try to do those 2 months, and perhaps more. We'll see. We'll see what the future holds, and hopefully get more things out. And if we get them out, great. If not, hey, you'll at least get 2 months from us.
Yeah, I mean, that is pretty much it. You know, it is one of those things where I currently have a day job and a night job and a couple of other things that I do on the side, so finding the time to maintaining listening and recording and editing schedule is difficult. And I'm sure Buzz also has a lot of things going on in his life. I know he does. And, you know, it is a do as we can because we have the love and the passion for it and bring content to you, our devout listeners.
Of which I hope now we're actually in the tens. Who knows? We might have actually surpassed that, but maybe. I know one time we only had a handful, so we might still have a handful. If that's the case, hey, great.
Well, you know, the way I feel about it, if I'm an asshole, is that I don't care if anybody listens to it. I mean, I want people to listen to it, but if they don't, that's fine, because I get to talk about cool shit with you. So.
Indeed, and I would like to reiterate that if it's on the internet, it never goes away forever, just like this podcast. So eventually someone will stumble upon it and listen to it in some capacity. So there is that.
That they will. That they will. But now on to the topic of tonight's episode, the second studio album by the band Tiger Army. Tiger Army 2, Power of Moonlight. Released on July 24th of 2001 on Hellcat Records. At a runtime of 36 minutes and 17 seconds, produced by Nick 13. I think I said that it was on Hellcat Records. If not, let me reiterate it. Tiger Army is Nick 13 on guitar and lead vocals. Jeff Kresk, I may have mispronounced that, double bass and vocals. London May on drums. They did bring in some additional musicians for this. Lars Fredrickson provided some additional vocals, as did Matt Freeman and Davey Havoc and Greg Lays, added in some steel guitar.
So we actually have a conglomeration of punk sounds from this as well, because, of course, if you know who Lars Fredrickson is and Davey Havoc, you know what bands are in. And if you don't, well, you should look them up, because one's Rancid, the other one is AFI. So very, very cool that they actually helped out with this. And I might be mistaken, but I'm going to take a guess and say I think I don't know if this is the same London May that played with Samhain. I might be wrong on that, but I'm pretty sure it's the same guy.
It is.
Well, there we go. So that's even cooler. So look, it's like we have the numbers to get to Glenn Danzig, how far removed you are in this band as well. So apparently we're going to be doing the punk version of that, I guess.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. Which this one would not be very, obviously. So yeah, man. Why did you choose this album?
So a couple things. We haven't talked about Tiger Army yet, and I wanted to for a while. And this is one of those psychobilly bands where they're not quite rockabilly when it comes to psychobilly, but they have that feel to them in some of their songs. The fact that they use an upright bass does play into that. And even especially on the slower songs, you can definitely tell. The other thing too is Nick 13 is actually a very accomplished musician. Some people like his style of vocals, some people don't. This almost hinges on what some people might consider emo, and I would disagree with that for a number of reasons, but just to kind of reiterate why I'm going back to this. This album meant a lot to me because it came out my senior year. I remember listening to it a lot because I liked the first album so much. So when this one came out, I was just like, yes, oh, this is cool. I'm going to keep listening to it. It's got one of the best punk songs on here, in my opinion. I definitely put in the top 20. There's also a bunch of tracks on here. Whenever I talk to people about this band, if they've ever heard of them, they usually will list at least two or three songs off of this album. So this is one of those kind of influential albums that people know about. Whether or not this is the best album is neither here nor there at this moment. We might talk about that later. But a lot of people have really good memories about this, or for a lot of people, this is their first Tiger Army album. So that's kind of why I wanted to hit this first instead of the first album.
I mean, it's certainly my first Tiger Army, so I can't really speak to whether it's better or worse than any of the others.
Oh, good. Then you're just like everyone else I introduced us to. So usually what I do with people when I introduce them to this band is I'll say, hey, look, all their other stuff is really good. But if you want to know kind of what it's like being at a live show, if you kind of want to know what they do and dip your toe in this, here's this album. Go listen to it. If you like it, I'll show you the other stuff. If you don't, great. You've at least listened to it once, and we can still be friends and just not talk about this band ever again. That's usually what I do with this when I talk to people about this type of music. We'll get some ideas later on, but that's partly why I wanted to do it. It is influential to me. It's influential to a lot of people. There was this really cool circle that happened during this time too, in the late 90s, early 2000s, where a lot of punk bands gave each other support. Last year we talked about Calabrese, or Calabrese, however you want to pronounce them, doing a lot of horror punk things. We're going to talk about another band a little bit later on in this episode of this podcast where we'll discuss this as well. But a lot of these bands kind of gave each other props and helped each other out. And Calabrese, this is actually, I think, Davey's like favorite album from this band as well. So it's kind of cool that they give props to each other and give that support going out, because we're living in the digital age now. We're back in the 80s and 90s. You would do have a street team where people would go out and pass out CDs and cassettes. Now it's, hey man, you should check this out, and I'm from this band, so if I like it, I know you like it too. So yeah, it's kind of cool that got passed around during this time. You still see it, but it's almost like you don't see it quite as much. So that's something else that has this, like, I'd say magical feel to it, but I'm going to use that for lack of better terminology. Has a very just magical feel to it. Like, this is almost like the last time we really get to see this in music history. Maybe it'll happen again, but it seems like this is the last time it kind of stayed underground, but still used modern technology to push things around to get the names out there.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely comes from street teams have been a thing for a long time, up until very recently, and they still do exist, but you're right, in the digital age, and it's completely different. But what I did want to say is that this has a very particular sound. I know they are considered psychobilly, and I can't speak to their entire discography, but this is, I don't know that I would necessarily consider this album a psychobilly album.
So the first time I listened to, well, of their first album, they did a song of that one that was very, very much a country song.
Mm-hmm.
This one of the tracks on it, we'll talk about here in a little bit. Nick 13 actually went back a few years ago and released a country album, and it was a bunch of covers with one original song, but he covered his own song. And when we get there, I'll talk about it, but it actually sounds really badass as a country song. Funny enough. So as we've talked about before, when it comes to psychobilly, it's almost like you're mixing like really heavy, fast punk rock with country, and you kind of shove them together. Or bluegrass might be more apt with that, but you get the idea. It's almost like the clashing of different cultures. This is, to me, more of a punk album, and it always will be. There are elements that shine through where you can almost see like, oh, this is kind of a psychobilly band. But it's that distinction. It's, you listen to a band like the Meteors, they're clearly, I almost call them rockabilly, but except for the lyrics. I mean, let's just be honest. It doesn't have that much, that level of guitar playing. This is definitely more like young, angry, like fast paced. You know, I'm not in a hollow body Monte Carlo. I'm on, I don't know what he plays. I think he plays a Gretsch. I'm almost certain Nick 13 plays a Gretsch. I think he's talked about it before. So there's elements to it, but I would agree this is definitely more of a punk album. Even if people consider them a psychobilly band, and I will stand by that. I will always refer to this band more as a punk band than a psychobilly band. But the argument's out there. I'm not going to have it with anyone, but it is there in case anyone wants to dive down and actually look into things.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you look at like lyrical composition, I can see the psychobilly thing, and that's fair, or a horror punk thing. But the sound of this, it is punkier rockabilly to me, and that's fine. I mean, it's good. It's incredibly well played. To Nick 13's guitar, the only promotional still I've ever seen of him is holding a Gretsch. So he has at least played one, whether he plays one all the time or not. But to your point about like the scene and the way people helped each other out at the time, back at the dawn of the century and everything, you can tell that these guys were very plugged in by all the guest musicians that they have to come in. And you can also tell that this, and one of the cool things about rockabilly and psychobilly is when you listen to it, it always sounds like the bands are having fun. And this band, you know, it would be very interesting to see them live, I think, because I'm not going to say that they sound like they're having Stray Cat levels of fun on this recording, but you can tell that they had a lot of fun in studio making stuff. So. Or at least that's the vibe I get.
So I've never seen them live, but I know at least three people that have, and they all tell me roughly the same thing. When you see them live, there's a lot of energy. They're very engaging with the crowd. They enjoy crowd participation. They like it when people actually know their music. And it's a very fun time. That's what I've always been told. It's just very fun and very energetic. And even though Nick 13 is getting up there in age, apparently even now it's still very much like that. Listening to this album, and again, it sounds like they're having fun. When a band has fun making it, when they're just enjoying themselves and they don't care if they get big and they don't care if their songs go anywhere, they're just like, man, we're enjoy playing together, we make some good music. That to me is when bands do the best, when they stop worrying about how much money they're making, they stop worrying about anything else other than just like, look, fuck the rest of us and everything else. It's all about us three or us four, us five, whoever's in the band. And the fact that all of us think we're playing really well together, and this is what's happening. There are some bands that still do that. I don't know that I'm not going to speak to all bands, but at least in this genre, that's what it feels like. If it looks like they're having fun and they're just having a great time on stage, and they're very just open with their fans, they want people to come in, they want people to enjoy their music. And they have a positive attitude. So if you ever get a chance to follow Nick 13, he's actually very cool about this. He actually wants you to record his shows, apparently. Like, he does not get mad about it. I can't speak to the man because I've never met him, but he almost seems like someone that's like, look, I'm comfortable where I'm at. I'm not going to cry about losing a few bucks over someone recording a song. So please record it and, you know, send it, share it with your friends and family. I don't know that's what's going through his mind, but he seems like that kind of person.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, in this day and age, too. I mean, it's good that he has that kind of attitude. He said it's really hard to stop.
Unless you go to a Glenn Danzig concert where security actually comes in and takes your phones. That's a conversation for another time, but I have seen that happen.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Going on to the album, while we're talking about it, there's a lot of references here, and this is where they kind of fall into more of a horror punk band.
Mm-hmm.
There's a song about being a ghost. There's a song on here that has to do with a H.P. Lovecraft poem. There's a very kind of depressing song on here that was that one he did for the that country version. There's stuff on here you're going to hear that kind of goes back and forth. And you'll hear it when you listen to the music, and you'll kind of pick up on certain things during each track. kind of makes me sad. We can't really play the music here because I'd love to, but I would encourage you, if you are near a computer right now and you're listening to this podcast and you're even somewhat like, I want to go listen to this, pull up YouTube. You can find this album on YouTube and just listen to it, and you'll understand what we're talking about when we're walking through it. So with that said, from a technical aspect, I'm just going to go ahead and jump out and say everybody's on point. Everyone knows what they're doing. You can tell they practice, and you can tell that because they practice and know each other musically, they pull out a lot of stuff. It's also a very well-produced album. So I just want to jump in with that before Ben takes over from here.
Yeah, no, I agree with all of that. Again, there's something of magic in a 30-piece. They're often able to sound bigger than they are because there's so much room sonically for the instruments to occupy that you don't always get when you have a two-guitar attack. Not that I don't love a two-guitar attack, but especially for this genre, I think that this is about the right size for a band. And especially when you're doing it in the studio and do overdubs, which I don't think they did a whole lot of or anything. But you can tell that they're locked in. The compositions are, I'm not going to say that they're simple, but they are deceptively complex because they don't sound like they're very complex until you really start to pay attention to them. Lyrically, it does fold in a lot of, as Butts said, a lot of horror punk elements. And it's not as far out there as Rocky Erickson when we did him, but it kind of reminded me a little bit of Rocky Erickson and the way that he wrote his lyrics. It is not, you know, when you think of, I think the general listener, when you hear horror punk, probably thinks Misfits, and this is not the Misfits kind of horror punk. This is something different. But it is really well played, very well produced, high caliber, well sequenced album. It flows really well. No complaints at all on that end about any of it.
Yeah, this even the first time I heard this, you know, even when I was a kid hearing this, this was, to me, it was amazing. And back then, going back to the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, emo was just starting to become a thing. It really was. Like, it started to kind of branch off a little bit from punk. There's a lot of emo bands that kind of started as punk bands around this era as well. And sometimes it's hard to sift through that. And the reason I'm bringing this up is the way that Nick 13 sings. He has a very high-pitched voice. And while he can sing, he also does a lot of screaming into a mic at times, and that's kind of where the very first time I heard him, I wasn't sure about it. And then I stopped paying attention to how he was singing and just listening to the music. And when I locked that in, it brought out a lot more. And that's, as to your point about the music being more complex than people realize it is, there's a lot going on. He's doing a lot with his guitar. That upright bass is doing a lot more than you think he is. That drummer is doing a hell of a lot more than you think he is. And when you start paying attention to it and you put the vocals back on these tracks, all of a sudden it becomes, oh, well, this fits actually pretty well. This wasn't as soppy as I thought it was. This is actually a really good band. And they're doing, I dare say, they're doing a lot of what you hear from good country and good horror punk and throwing them together. That's really what it feels like. The production on this is amazing. You hear everything. There's no bad recording, at least not the version I heard. And even on the CD, it sounds so complete. There's no other way to really explain it. It feels right to me. It feels like they were on point every time, even though, yes, they did this in a studio and they probably recorded it over several days. It almost feels like they just went in and said, hey, you know what? We got 40 minutes. Let's try to make an album. And just go from song to song to song, and that was it. While I'm sure that didn't happen, that's the feeling I always got from it, was that they were just like on point all the time, and their producer was able to actually listen to what they were doing and say, yes, we're going to mix this, and it's going to sound amazing, and bam, it worked.
Yeah, well, I mean, and this was produced by Nick 13, so you can really see that he had a certain sound that he was wanting to get out of this. And he achieved it. I mean, it's a really, really well produced, you know, type package. I mean, I don't think that there's a whole lot more to say about this. For me anyway, about like the quality of the recording and everything. Now, that doesn't mean that it translates to me liking every track, and we'll get to that when we talk about tracks, because there are some that I think are weaker than others. But as an overall package, especially for something that is under 40 minutes, very enjoyable.
And that's where I'm at. I mean, this is, as far as their playing goes, that they were on point. You're not going to, it's the one thing you can't say negative about this band is you can't say they can't play or they can't perform, because dear God, they can. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So with that in mind, do you want to move on to tracks, or do you have anything else you want to say?
No, I'm happy to move on to tracks. And as is our want, I will go forward and list the ones that I really liked. I know you will go more in depth breaking them down, and I will leave that to your expertise. But I think it opens solidly with the prelude and Call of the Ghost Tigers. I thought that was really kind of interesting and not something that you generally see on a rockabilly album anyway. So again, this is more leaning towards the four pounder psychobilly. Towards Destiny, I thought was pretty cool. Power of Moonlight, the title track. When Night Comes Down, Great on Breaking. Cupid's Victim is really good. Annabelle Lee, the Edgar Allan Poe influence track is cool. FTW and Remembered Forever. I really liked Remembered Forever as a closer. I thought that was a very good closer.
So as this was your first listen to when it comes to Tiger Army, every time they do an album, they always have an opener. And the opener is anywhere from like 20 seconds to roughly a minute. And the reason they do this is whenever they open their shows, that's usually what they start with. They'll come out and they'll do that real quick to get the crowd energized. It's the same thing when you're listening to the album. So, you know, when they start up, it comes in kind of slow, not slow, but slower. And then Nick 13 comes in with a Tiger Army Never Dies. And like he screams it out. When he does that live, it gets people pumped up. And then once it's done, you just go right into the first one. Towards Destiny is a very fun song. It's very energetic. My favorite song on here is Incorporeal, or Incorporeal, however you want to pronounce that. What I like about it is this is one of the very few songs I've heard from any horror punk band or any band in general, and I'm sure there might be others out there that have done this, but this is the only one I can really think of, where it's from the perception of a ghost. And there's a lot of going back and forth with that, because some people think, oh, he's talking about being dead and being a ghost, and other people like me go, well, yes, he is, but he's also talking about being broken up with someone. And it's like almost like using that supernatural being as a catalyst for discussing what he's going through, which I always enjoyed. Also, the video for it's actually pretty badass. If you get a chance, you should definitely check that one out. That song in general is also the one that Calibrace likes a lot. And that to me is, I'm not going to say it's the most punk song on this album, but it's definitely up there for me. Power of Moonlight is very fun. It slows it down a little bit. It's very internal lyric wise. It's more of, it's a lot of feelings. It's almost like Rocky Erickson in a little ways, like how you're kind of like drawing on your, what you're dealing with and trying to push it out there. But my next track I really enjoyed was When Night Comes Down. That one is just so cool. The first time I heard it, before I actually read the lyrics, I thought he was talking about being a vampire, and it's not, it kind of is, but it's kind of not. The way it ends with an organ is just always amazing. Cupid's Victim is well done. I didn't like it the first time I listened to this. When I was in high school, I didn't like it. It took me a couple of years before I actually started liking it a lot. Cupid's Victim to me is probably the most psychobilly song on this album. It is a little bit slowed down, but it also kind of points out to the fact that they can do slower music and still be energetic about it. Valley of Dreams is okay. Annabelle Lee, I really enjoyed. That's a very, very fast song. And with you being a bass player, Ben, I don't know if you appreciate it as much as I do, but I love the bass playing in that.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's almost like that's like their bass driven song. So the fact that they used a Poe poem to kind of take this idea and run with it and do something cool with it. I'm going to skip In the Orchard because I'm going to come back to that in a minute. Under Saturn's Shadow is very good, but FTW Fuck the World is a very awesome song. That's probably the another one that's like up there as far as like one of the more punk songs on this album. I will agree that Remembered Forever is a very good one to end it on. And now I'm going to come back to In the Orchard. In the Orchard is the one that he recorded when he did his country album. And this is the one, if you hear it, they have the steel guitar playing on it. And it almost sounds rockabilly, because there's very much a country feel to it, even though they're doing things faster paced. This is also when I was discussing earlier that, hey, there's like almost kind of a depressing song on here. It's kind of depressing when you read the lyrics. He's clearly talking about, when I was younger, I thought it was a breakup song. It's not. It's a song about losing a loved one and like having to deal with everything that comes with that. And The Orchard is the symbolism for what he's going through, and he's actually contemplating suicide, is when he starts talking about what's going on to the seasons. And funny enough, if you're looking at the album cover, because I haven't talked about that yet, the album cover has an orchard in the background, so I thought it was a nice little addition to it to kind of throw that out there. But that's, even though it's not my favorite song on here, it's one that I listen to a lot because of what it means, and it's a very personal song as far as that goes. Also, I like the guitar playing on it. You can hear Nick playing as well with the steel guitar, and it actually sounds pretty awesome going back and forth with each other.
So I want to go back on something you touched on, the bass playing. And I do agree that the bass playing on this album is very good. And it is worth pointing out, and a lot of bands do this, where on stage they'll have somebody playing stand-up bass, and I believe, because this guy is playing double bass, that it was a stand-up bass that he played in the studio, and that is a different skill set than playing an electric bass. Because not only is it just a different physical construct, the strings are longer and thicker, but also most stand-up basses do not have frets on them. So, which makes it, if you've never played anything fretless, and you know, I'm not a super accomplished musician, so I'm sure it's much easier for some people than it is for others, but you really have to know your note positioning without a visual guide. And I think that is impressive as fuck.
Oh yeah. And that's why I brought out, because I know you play a lot more bass than I do. But that's like that track on Annabelle when it starts out, doom 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 doom, like he's going up another fret, like there's not a fret board, but he's going up and down that board quick, dude. And I'm like, I've seen videos of them doing it live, and like whenever, of course, the gentleman on here, Jeff, he's not with the band anymore, but whenever they do this one live, whoever they have on bass is like, has to be on point when they do that song, because it's incredibly fast. And it's weird, because if you don't know what to listen to, it can get drowned out over the drums and the guitar playing, but it's still there. And that bass player has to be like Johnny on the spot, because if you lose time, man, you just threw the other two guys off. So
the
fact that he did this so quickly and was like, just like almost treating it like he was doing a solo on a guitar. That's one of the reasons I like that track. I mean, it's not the only one you can hear it on. That's just, to me, the one that's more
sure,
like out there, that you're, oh no, this is, he's actually really good at this. And it's funny, because you listen to it and you go back to listen to the other tracks, it's like, well, hold on, what else is he doing? Holy crap, this guy's fingers are crazy. So that's something I always enjoyed, because every album is like that. It doesn't matter who they have playing bass, someone always brings it.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, that just goes to the point that we were making earlier, that the playing on this album is just on point. And really, to do a three-piece right, everybody kind of has to be on point.
Definitely, definitely. But you did say you had some less than stellar opinions, so I think we should touch on those real quick.
Well, I mean, it's not that I have. I mean, you know, it's not that none of these tracks are awful. It's just, other than the ones I mentioned, you know, the others I can more or less take or leave. I mean, I like it, In the Orchard. FTW is a very almost straight up punk song, which I appreciate, but it's not that it didn't fit in with the rest of the album, because it did. It's just not really what I was looking for. And that is something that could change if I listened to the album tomorrow, right? Because it's still a quality song. It's just, as music the more you listen to it and the more your mood changes, it's so personal that, like, you know, unless you have like super duper favorite tracks that you're always going to like, there are going to be other tracks that resonate more with you depending on what's going on in your life. And, you know, when I listened to it, I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. But it, again, it just wasn't really what I was looking for out of this album, having listened to the previous 11 tracks.
Fair enough. But that's why I was like to get your opinion, because I think it gives listeners an idea of what to listen for if they're kind of in between. They can kind of go, okay, well, maybe this is, I'll listen to it and see, and okay, maybe I'll agree with this, or maybe we'll go, oh. Yeah. Or maybe someone would be like, wow, Buzz is an idiot. What the hell is he talking about? This album sucks. You know, I don't know.
it's all good, because it's one of those things where, like, you know, if you had a bad day, got cut off in traffic and all that stuff, and you hear FTW, you might be like, what the fuck's been talking about? This song is awesome.
Yeah, I think when the first time I had it, I remember buying it at, I bought it at Hastings, but I remember driving, I was going home, and I was like, we got to that track, and I was like, well, this is kind of cool. I think it was the same kind of thing. Whenever I did, I seemed to like drive a little bit faster, and I had like pay attention to what I was doing more. And I'm like, this is so cool. It's only like a 2-minute song, but who cares?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like that. There's a few songs on here I'm kind of like, I might skip over every now and then, but there's nothing bad on this album.
No.
There are tracks that are better in my opinion and Ben's opinion. But it's only like 34 minutes long. So I can power through it if I want to listen to the whole thing.
Well, this is something that I talk about on the, one of the other music podcasts that I'm on, is albums of this length. It's generally just put it on and take the ride, because it's short. You're going to get in and out. I mean, you can listen to this in the time it takes you to wash dishes, or, you know, cook dinner or whatever. And it's not a concept album by any means, but again, it's well sequenced enough and put together enough that I think you should listen to it as an album as opposed to just pulling tracks off of it.
Definitely. When I go jog in the mornings, like I can, what's fun about this is when I was getting ready to do this episode the last week or so, I was like, I'm going to go run and listen to it. Like before I even like got back to my house, I was like, oh, that's right. It's a punk album. There's only like 20, 30 minutes and we're done. That's right. I got to listen to something else now.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the good thing about it. If you just like, or man, I just don't like the particular song, just deal with it, man. Power through it. You'll be okay.
Yeah. I mean, and like, there's only two of the tracks of the 13 tracks on this album that are over 3 minutes and 30 seconds.
Yeah. That's again, that's nothing.
Yeah. So
anything else you want to say before we move on to grading?
No, I'm ready.
Well, I know what I'm going to give it, and you probably already know what I'm going to give it. But Ben, this is your first time listening to it, so Ben, before we grade this,
yeah,
because this is your first time listening to this band, just, and I know you can't judge them completely because I haven't listened to anything else, but just hearing what you heard, would you say if this band came and played anywhere near either of us, that you would not go see it?
Well, you know, that is a hard question, because I used to think that if I lived in a place where going and seeing live music was easier, I would do it more, but I found that not to be the case. But I would at least be like, what am I doing that night? Do I have to work the next day and all that other stuff? So I'll be intrigued about going and seeing them live. Yeah.
Awesome. That's what I was curious about. Okay. You can go ahead and grade first.
For those of you new to our grading paradigm, I always give one consensus grade, whereas Buzz gives two grades. So this being my first listen to it, I did enjoy this album quite a lot, but I want to leave myself room to come up if this is not their best album. So I'm going to give this a solid B.
Well, as Ben has said, and for those of you who have never listened to this before, if this is your first time listening to our podcast, I always give things two grades, and I do this because I try to be as objective as I can, as well as looking at it from what the style that we're doing is. So as a, just in general of like their playing, how they are as a band, how the tracks came together, production quality, etc., all of that I'm going to give a solid A, because every time I've heard them, they've always been on point. I've even people I've talked to that have been their shows. It's always the same thing, essentially, like, hey, this is an awesome show. They do this, they do this, this, and they're always on track. The only time I've ever heard anyone have anything negative to say is if a piece of equipment failed. Of course, that's not the band's fault at that point. That's the equipment's fault. So again, just from a music standpoint, just music, not this genre, it gets an A. From this genre, because we're talking about punk specifically, or alternative style music. While I have a lot of love for this album, because it did kind of get me through some rough spots my senior year, and I do like this band a lot, you can tell they're still kind of young, because this is only their second album. They do get better depending on what you think of it, but because we're talking about this album specifically, I'm actually going to give this a B-, because I actually think they could do, not production-wise, but I felt like they could have been a little bit faster, and I feel like there's about two or three songs they could have traded out for something a little more in the realm of horror punk, and I would give it a higher rating because of that. That said, remember, B-minus doesn't mean bad. B-minus is still pretty damn good, so don't think that I'm dogging this band or this album just because I gave it that low of a rating.
Yeah, no, not at all. That is... And, you know, I basically agree with all your assessments. So, definitely check it out if you had not. I mean, this is, like I said, this is my first time listening to the band. So what are we going to do next time?
First off, would you buy this album?
Oh, I forgot about that. That is an interesting question. After hearing it, I would maybe. I will say, though, because you brought up the cover earlier, like if this was back in the day where you could head to buy stuff without listening to it, I would have been turned off by that album cover. I hate that album cover, as a matter of fact. It doesn't influence what's inside it at all, but like in an era, like when this came out, where you really couldn't preview the music, you had to like kind of take a leap of faith. If it was something you didn't know, I would not have bought this. Now, having listened to it and enjoyed it, quite possibly.
That's interesting. I think we should talk about that from now on in our podcast. If the album existed before, before the digital age, where you could sample music before you actually bought the album, I think that might be a point of reference for us. We could do maybe.
Yeah,
we might talk about that. I'm going to tell you right now. I'm in the same boat. The only reason I bought this album is because I already heard them before, and their first album was kind of weird too, because it was just a tiger and a panther fighting, and you're like, what the hell is this? And then you listen to it, you're like, wow, this is not what I was expecting at all. Every album they do is like that. It's not what you see the album art and you're like, okay, what the hell is this? It's not telling me anything about the band. There's no band members on there.
Yeah,
this one is an orchard in the back. There's moon in the background. Okay, power moonlight, blah blah blah, and there's someone with a bat on their face that's being blocked out, and then they have a piercing through the lip. Okay, what the hell is that telling me? It doesn't tell me a whole lot. So I can definitely see, going back to that time, why someone would not pick this up. So my suggestion is, would I buy this now? Because we're living in the era we are now, listen to them first. If you like them, even somewhat, I would say buy it, because you're going to enjoy everything else they do. If you're just like, they're okay, don't waste your money.
Yeah. I mean, I am definitely a try to support bands as much as you can. And I still buy physical music for that reason, because I figure, like, I would not be the really real. I could not do these music podcasts that I do, whether this one with Buzz or Thunderdome Metal Reviews that I do with my other friends, if I actually had to source the albums myself and couldn't listen to them digitally. No way in hell. Because Buzz and I have done close to probably 50 albums at this point. And I mean, you figure on the low end of what an album costs, that'd be $500, you know, to a hell of a lot more than that. That being said, I do fully support trying to funnel money to these bands in ways that just listening to them on streaming does not do, whether that is buying physical copies of their stuff, going and seeing them live, or buying merchandise. So, off soapbox.
I think that's fair, and I think we've said everything we can about this particular album.
Yeah, I think so.
So, what are we doing next week, Ben?
What are we doing next week? I think we're going to have to, take a shot of some mezcal and head to a place after dark. Those other shots are here.
I think the internet ain't big enough for the two of us.
It might not be. It might not be. We might have to
So
have a.
there's your teaser for next week, people.
Indeed. See you then.
Peace out. Have a good night.